Middle cough.
Maybe it.
Recording this podcast on a Thursday as we watch a little golf. We get ready for college football. If you're listening to this before Thursday night, or you are, or if you're watching it live, we got a football game tonight. We got Ohio State and Minnesota Thursday night on Fox. So that's just one thing to keep an eye on. Don't forget, everybody, our DraftKings game is already underway at Eastlake. 100 people in, $20 a pop. We'll see what happens. So we'll be watching that this week. But we'll tell you more about DraftKings later. Just get in the Haberman and Middlecoff DraftKings League, whether you're in the golf game or not, because then you'll be in for football. So do that.
You said Ohio State plays Thursday night?
Ohio State plays tonight. We're recording this tonight. Ohio State, Minnesota, tonight.
Damn, that's sweet. That's awesome. I think Boise plays UCF tonight, too.
Yeah.
Good football night. Holy shit. I didn't realize Ohio State, Minnesota. I mean, I guess I did, but maybe I didn't.
No, this is why we'll repeat it. There's just a lot going on, a lot to keep up with. We'll get to some of the big games coming up in a few. Also, Middlecoff, the mailbag. Everybody get in the mailbag. Go to iTunes. Leave us a review. In that review, we want your favorite bar.
Yeah, favorite bar. Favorite bar, favorite drink, favorite bar. You can also do that same thing on our Facebook page, right? Leave a little question. Put a little thing up there. You can also just leave questions on different posts. Obviously, the podcast gets posted to Facebook as well. Zuckerberg, they're pretty well progressed on that website. You can just press a button and the podcast plays. Pretty incredible. So get on it right now. Facebook, LinkedIn, hit up us on DMs, whatever. You won't, if you hit us up on DMs, though, we'll just probably interact with you. Won't actually get your question answered. There's too much going on. I can't keep track of everything.
Yeah. The fastest way to get it in is you put it on the iTunes. You know, you can put it in a Facebook Messenger. We will check that before, like not just a post, also the Messenger. Other DMs, we'll read them, we'll interact. We might forget to include them in the mailbag, though. So,
yeah. A lot of moving parts. You know, we got families, we got lives. We got Colorado games to call. We just a lot of shit going on. Haberman, are you ready?
A lot going on, John. I'm ready. Did you see 500-pound Ralphie 6?
I did not, no. I thought you tweeted something. I pressed play. I didn't see a Ralphie there.
Baby Ralphie, Colorado put out a sweet little video about, it's like, you know, Chris Fowler narrated. And Ralphie's, baby Ralphie, year and a half old Ralphie, debuts on Friday.
How big is baby Ralphie?
500 pounds.
How big was normal Ralphie?
1,300?
Way bigger. Oh, so it's still got a little ways to go to get to big Ralphie size. A
little ways to go, yeah.
Was Ralphie the father?
No, so none of them are related. Ralphies are all girls. How about that little nugget?
Ralphie the mother? They have nothing in common. They just...
Their name just is always Ralphie, but they have no relation to each other.
Gender neutral name, I guess.
Yeah, I think a lot of people think Ralphie's a boy.
That's what I assume.
I did too until somebody told me a few years ago.
Yeah.
So,
well, say hi to Ralphie.
Great tradition, John. It is cool. I don't know if it's quite, you know, you don't quite get the full effect when it's baby Ralphie, but very adorable. Adorable. Ralphie.
Remember a couple years ago at Oklahoma when the Sooners.
The Sooner Schooner?
It ripped up the field.
Did they have like a celebrity person in the schooner in addition to like the regular person?
I thought it was just like a, you know, either students or I don't think it was anyone famous.
That thing is
And if there were, I don't know if famous people were getting in that fucking thing.
Not anymore. I thought there was like I thought an ESPN reporter was in the front seat or Jesse Palmer or something like that.
Maybe it's happened before on that individual one. I thought it was random. I mean, guy, if you haven't Googled Oklahoma cart flip, did people get ejected? The cart shatters. The field gets destroyed. The horses do not break stride. They didn't stop.
Maybe it was like the field, like hype guy. Maybe that's who was it. I don't know. It was.
There was just carnage. Absolute carnage.
What was better? That highlight. You remember when Bevo tried to go after the Georgia Bulldog?
Ugga, yeah.
Ugga.
He just like hit the fence.
Yeah, he was just trying to say hi.
Freaked. Yeah, the dog got big. A little close. I thought that the Oklahoma snafu could have been really bad. Like if you got flipped and the horse and the carriage just, you know, could have ripped off an arm, it could have been really bad.
I
mean, Ugga could run away. What's it? Bevo? Bevo?
Bevo. B-E-V-O.
I would say if Bevo got out of the fence, you could have a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. But is Bevo chasing people down? I don't know.
Yeah. You know, maybe a red. Isn't that what the Bulls kind of naturally get gravitated toward? Yeah. I went to Pamplona when I spent 2 months in Spain, I think in 2005. Spent the night in Pamplona.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't really sleep. And then the running of the Bulls, you know, kicks off at about 6 a.m. I'm on the fence, like Fry and Trenton. I'm like, you guys are just a little fucking crazier than me. Like, I can push the envelope a little bit in life. I don't know if I can do this. And I couldn't do it. I stayed on the fence. They got down on the road. I mean, I'm right there as the Bulls turn the corner. And I didn't do it. I waited till they passed. Then I got in the street and I followed them to the deal. But guy, you couldn't move. I mean, it was just like jam-packed. And these Bulls come racing across the rocks too. So it's not grass. They slip. It's risky. I pushed out, but I wouldn't call it that. No, everyone's intoxicated. Everyone.
It's quite a recipe. 6 a.m.
Yeah, it's why a lot of Americans get gorged.
Tradition you would not invent in 2021.
No.
Or in America.
The Bulls naturally, I feel like, gravitate toward Americans. Like you smell. Idiot.
Yeah.
I'm coming for your sternum.
You take this. Here's something to take back with you. A medical bill.
Those things
bill.
Come flying. I remember sitting there thinking these things are fucking hauling ass.
No, thank you. No, thank you. By the way, if you're listening to it, go check out the YouTube channel. If you are watching, subscribe, hit that bell so you know when we go live. This show is sponsored by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Our friends at Tito's Handmade Vodka, John. So many of you keep sending us pictures, your transfusions, whatever it is that you're making. You kissing the bottle, I don't know. Makes me a little uneasy.
It's like a trophy, guy.
I know. It's just maybe one quick kiss. The slow sensual kiss, I can do without. No. Closed lips, no tongue.
I think we should listen, if you're listening to this right now, we need to do a blowout. And I mean a blowout for football season.
Okay.
Right? Obviously, the NFL season. But this weekend, Saturday, games galore. I know you're going to be drinking because that's what people do on Saturdays. Take pictures watching games with your Tito's. Whether you're having Tito soda, transfusion, that's what you made. Whatever you're drinking. I don't care. John Daly's.
Yep.
Straight shots, straight out of the bottle. You just take pictures, tweet them, Instagram out of us. It's a Tito's football weekend. That's what
absolutely.
It is.
Every weekend it starts now. Starting Thursday
it
night,
starts
Tito's
now.
Thursday.
I know for a fact our listeners are going to consume at least several games on Saturday, and I know you guys like your alcoholic beverages, so get your Tito's out.
Somebody sent me a DM the other day that said, Mario, he said, I did not know about John Daly's until a month ago, and now it's my favorite alcoholic drink. I said, same. I didn't know about it until like a month and a half ago, and I went to the wedding. Everybody was drinking John Daly's, and now it's just...
This is somewhat biased because these guys are on board, but even if Tito's had never come to ours, it is a pretty incredible alcoholic drink, is it not?
The John Daly.
It's, you know, they say foo-foo drinks or whatever for girls, but then you have some of the ones that they drink. You're like, they are pretty tasty.
Yeah.
This is like a guy's version because it tastes so incredible. You don't taste anything. It just tastes like you're drinking an Arnold Palmer.
Oh, man.
Be careful, people.
Yes, be careful. That's right. Drink responsibly. Tito's Handmade Vodka is America's original craft vodka. In 95, the man himself, John Tito Beveridge, built his own distillery. He started distilling not one, not two, not three, not four, but not five, six times in copper pots. And that's how you get the amazing product that we all know and love. Distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas, 40% alcohol by volume, namely 80 proof, crafted to be savored responsibly.
Have a weekend, people. Have a weekend.
Also, mybookie.ag, promo code HAM and the number one, where right now they will match that deposit up to 100%, although match it 100% up to $1,000 when you make that deposit with the code HAM1. You can also decline the bonus. If you accept the bonus, you have to bet the full amount before you can withdraw funds. But either way, use the promo code HAM1 and let them know that we sent you.
Yeah, and I did sprinkle a little bit, so if you want to be entertained, if either of these guys are in the mix come the weekend, Jordan Spieth and Cam Smith, I think, have a pretty good chance. I just put $50 on them, about 25-1. Mybookie.ag, promo code HAM1. Obviously, college football is full go. The NFL guy, I mean, we'll talk about it next week, but we got, you know, Cowboys-Bucks next Thursday. So a week from recording this, I mean, we're basically I don't know that how many hours are in a 7-day work week, but that's what we are right now, basically, officially. 7 official days. And a little more as we're recording this.
I hadn't quite thought of it that way.
You know, college football, full go. I flipped on TV last night, UAB, which, you know, I mean, I actually watched a quarter just because it was like football, it's early. I was like, there's, you know, some football. But I absolutely love LSU this weekend.
Even I think most people do, which is why I like UCLA in the points.
Do you think UCLA is going to beat LSU?
You know, I don't feel like they should, no. But I also think LSU is... This is not Joe Burrow's LSU team. Now, I do think they're... I also think it's... I'm in a weird spot because I think LSU is almost getting undervalued a little bit because of the way they looked last year. I think in some ways LSU... You know, LSU had... I think really talent. The LSU stacked on defense, and their defense wasn't good. I think that was that was the end of Bo Pelini last year, right? Bo Pelini was their defensive coordinator. And I don't know that no one's really – I don't want to cast aspersions here. I haven't studied the tape, John, but people don't necessarily talk about Bo as like, you know, the most flexible modern defensive mind, right? It's not like new – I just wonder if their talent underachieved on defense last year and if it's going to come back this year.
Well, if you look 2 years ago, now they had a stacked roster. They had two coaches that one became an offensive coordinator in the NFL, and I think the other guy took the Baylor job. So he lost both of his coordinators. And let's face it, Eddie O is like kind of the Cajun Harbaugh. A lot of hooting and hollering. He's not scheme guy, right? A lot of swords, a lot of motivational shit, a lot of like poke the tiger and let everyone roar. Grr. So he is pretty dependent on his coordinators. But I was watching something yesterday of David Pollack talking about their roster. It is stupid talented. Like, people were embarrassed last year for them getting smoked because they had all these NFL guys on defense. And, like, they should be able to physically outman LSU. Now, obviously, their quarterback, beside Joe Burrow historically and, like, Jamarcus Russell, can always be a question mark. So who knows? Maybe they struggle to score points. But it's just... There's a chance, guy, they have like 10 first-rounders that are playing. You know, not all draft-eligible this year, but over the next couple years, right? Maybe 3 or 4 on this team, right, that are juniors, maybe 3 or 4 that are sophomores, and maybe a couple like true freshmen. I mean, that's the type of talent that this – even though Chip's team, you know better than me, but it feels like his most talented team since he's been there, right?
Yeah, yep. Yeah, but, I mean, they got to get better quarterback play. Their quarterback – DTR was –
But he's their guy.
Last week. Right. Now, by the second half, he actually got in rhythm. They got him in rhythm, then they took him out of the game.
Is Hawaii terrible?
I don't think Hawaii's very good, no. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't think Hawaii's got much to offer. And that was a 9 a.m. body clock game for Hawaii. 9:30, I guess.
True. You know, so, it's a tough transition from the islands to L.A. and then back to the islands. It's a tough life.
Ton of good games. Penn State, Wisconsin's early on Saturday. Stanford, Kansas State, 9 a.m. also on Saturday. Stanford's got this quarterback, Tanner McKee, who was a top 5 quarterback recruit 3 years ago, went on a mission, came back last year. Georgia,
could
Clemson.
Could they be good this year, Stanford?
They could be, but this guy hasn't even won the job outright. They're going to play 2 quarterbacks. So, Georgia, Clemson, that was a game you and I talked about the other day. Georgia's got a ton of pressure on them. They're talking about, like, can Georgia break its 40-year national championship drought?
Ton of injuries right now.
Ton of injury. Clemson's only -3 with a quarterback. Now, JT Daniels, DJ Uiagalelei, Dr. Pepper. Where is that game? Do you know? Clemson's -3. It must be neutral.
I thought it was in
true home
Arthur
game?
Arthur Blank's place.
Yeah,
is what
that makes sense. So kind of a home game for Georgia.
That or the Panther Stadium, but like one of those two neutral southern places where they play.
Gotcha.
Is what I assumed.
Anyway, so, you know, I kind of like Clemson there, -3. Their guys have been in these spots so many times.
It's in Charlotte. It's in the Panther Stadium.
Okay. If it was in Atlanta, I'd feel a little differently. I like Clemson in that game. Alabama, Miami, how do you feel about Bryce Young? 17.5 is Alabama's line.
Oh, I thought that's how much money he's already made from NIL.
1.75, 17.5 million.
I think Alabama fucks him up. One game that I kind of liked.
Just one other thought on that. Like Saban, or 19.5 points. Saban has been running a complete, like, newsflash button-down operation. But they have just, you remember what they looked like last year? where they just felt like they were ahead of everybody from the start and
had a big advantage with Corona and all the guys returning.
Never looked back. Yeah, they don't have all of that this year, so maybe that's too many points. I would chill out on that game for me, 19 and a half, but
who are they playing? Oh,
Miami of Florida.
Is Miami of Florida any good?
Well, it's just 20 points with a newish team. That's all.
Week one, new coordinator. Billy O'Brien is his coordinator. that's pretty cool. Like I'm into that. I think Sark sneaky has some pressure just in the sense of first week, right? As the head coach and you're playing a really good non-power five team. So just like, listen, the majority of UT fans aren't going to like give Louisiana Lafayette any respect.
No.
And
did you say they're a top 25 team? Did you mention that?
Well, yeah. They should be ranked ahead of Texas probably just based on previous couple years. But like, it's a 9-point line. Like I like Lafayette to win this game.
And
To win. I think Texas loses.
See, I think it's easy to forget that Texas was not that bad last year. Now, they lose a lot of guys. I guess they lose their quarterback. But Texas is stat. Like, Texas was not that bad last year. They got fired after their coach. I'm not saying they're going to be great. I'm not saying they're a 10-win team, but you don't have to be a 10-win team to win this game.
I think Louisiana Lafayette's closer in like Cincinnati and Boise than people realize. Like
I agree
with
you.
Pretty legit.
Yeah, and they're an oiled operation right now.
I also dabbled a little money on a personal friend who took over. You know, we don't root for anything to happen to another one of our friends, Jim McElwain, who got a raw deal in Florida. Coach in Central Michigan. I think appendix blew up and he had to get rushed to the hospital.
I sent Mac a text. I've not heard back
respond?
Yet. No, he often does. I know he checks in on us, but not yet.
Don't worry. He has Tim Skipper. Tim Skipper might be the head coach. And if he is, you can get them almost 5-1. Missouri. They're not playing Florida. They're not playing A&M. They're not even playing Kentucky. Missouri? I think this is upset city, baby. Central Michigan against Missouri. Tim Skipper, 1-0. Look for him to be the next head coach of the Dogs in 2 years when DeBoer goes back to Indiana or something.
If you can find a line on ASU Southern Utah, I would find it. Southern Utah, I've never heard of this in my life, John. Did I say this the other day? I probably did, but I'm going to say it again. I've never heard of a team playing week one on a short week. But Southern Utah played on Saturday night against San Jose State, and now they're playing Thursday night at ASU. I have never heard of that in college football.
Never heard of a smaller school?
No. Playing week one on a short week. They played week zero on a Saturday. Week one, they play Thursday night. They're playing a short week to start the season. I've never heard of anybody doing that.
45-point underdog. Their quarterback threw for 117 yards last week. Could be tough.
All right.
Does Arizona State have any coaches?
They do. Yeah, they got most of them.
Okay, cool.
At least for week one.
MyBookie.ag, promo code AM1. Get your gamble on, my people.
Now, are they going to run it up like they did against Arizona when they scored 70? We'll see.
Probably not.
Oh, what other game? I don't know what to make of this game. I think people will tend to bet Nevada on this game. It's just a sneaky,
I'm glad you brought this up.
Cal, Nevada, Saturday night. I like Cal. I think a lot of people are going to love Nevada for good reason. Carson Strong, their quarterback, is back. Jay Norvell, really good coach. Solid operation. But I think Cal's just did not have a normal season last year. I think these guys are itching. Bill Musgrave, John, second year as the offensive coordinator. Justin Wilcox, Coin Dang on defense. Chase Garbers, our guy, Cal quarterback. So I think it's 3 last I looked, 3.5 maybe. Do you have in front of you?
I stumbled upon some journalist work that said this Nevada quarterback might be like a legit NFL guy.
Yeah, people really liked him last year. I think he's one of these guys that's quote unquote under the radar, but also like one of those smart football people love talking about Carson Strong. I'm doing air quotes here. It's true, it's legit. But I think there's just a little too much of that right now on them.
Well, that's classic August college football. Like, hey, listen. I know everyone is talking about Josh Allen and Baker Mayfield, but watch this guy in Nevada. And then 4 weeks later, no one's talking about him. And I'm not rooting for this kid to fail or anything, but nothing. At least in the NFL, you've made it there. You've had to establish yourself. Like they talked about you as a breakout guy. In college football, in the months of August, the media And teams do this a little bit too, so it's not just the outside noise and just the hype around just college sports. Watch for these three guys to be potential first-round picks. Then you watch the draft, and the guy ends up going in like the seventh round. You're like, what the fuck happened?
Now, this guy, again, I think it's a...
I'm not trying to hate.
No, I know you're not. Actually, I don't want to overcorrect the other way and say he's not worth talking about, because he is. He was 27 touchdowns, 4 picks, 70% last year. Like, Nevada should be legit. Nevada was picked to win the Mountain West.
Yes, they were.
So they're good. Like, this is going to be hard for Cal. I'm just saying, I think there's a little too much on the back.
And their coach for a long time, I think, was with Oklahoma with Bob Stoops in his heyday.
Yeah, they're good.
This guy's been around.
This is if Cal wins the game, they should get credit because it is a losable game for Cal.
Yeah.
I just believe in Justin Wilcox and Cal.
Nevada's beat them before. Remember a guy named Colin Kaepernick beat Tedford?
Do remember.
Twice, back to back years.
All right, John, let's dive into it. Let's start with this. On Good Morning Football on Thursday morning, Peter Schrager, friend of the show, noted host of the State of the Empire, or the off-season Niners rally.
I think you got it right. Yeah.
Said about Jimmy Garoppolo and Trey Lance, quote, "Why even waste time with Jimmy? This is what Kyle wants to do. Rip the Band-Aid off. Let's go with Trey Lance."
Well, I think he represents what a lot of people think. Here's the problem, though. As we currently have this conversation, you'd have to legitimately rip a Band-Aid off, a.k.a. a cast that he has on his hand right now. So, like, this was a conversation that you and I literally had for months, and then even once camp started, up until about last week when it became kind of evident that Jimmy was going to... He can't. The guy can't take snaps right now. I think the number one question I have for week one is this guy going to be available? Because I think that much, last night they clearly had some sort of dinner at the stadium where, you know, it's not boosters, but clearly like high money people are invited. I saw a picture of like the tables from like the point of view where the players are. It's like, yeah, there's probably some techies in there that, you know, have large bank accounts because there weren't. Guy, it was like just in the red zone. It wasn't tables of the whole field. It was just red zone to the deal. You're like, oh, yeah, this is – you got to be a high-priced guy to get this invite. You know, and a
access
player.
Access is never free.
Access is never free. And the players that were there, it was not just like, oh, let's just roll a couple practice squatters. Yeah. It was Trent, Kittle. I was like, okay, this matters. It
wasn't the community football field dedication.
It might have been their five biggest suite holders or something, right? I mean, it felt like that. He had a cast. I mean, he was there. He had a cast on his hand. So to me, like we talked about it a couple days ago, I think it's fair to say there are some question mark just as a human with a major strong, but with an injury. Any injury that requires you have a cast is not just, oh, it's nothing, right? I'm past that it's nothing. It's something. Now, how big of a something, we're going to find out, but I think him practicing next week, probably the number one story we're going to look for moving forward, right?
Yeah, and of course it's something because, like you said, it can't possibly be nothing because it is something. But also it's the something is it's a finger on his throwing hand. So
Index.
I'm not exactly sure. I got to study the tape to see John Howie just hold it in the back. But that's absolutely something, especially because – like right now, when we talk about Trey Lance playing a football game, there's a lot of unknowns. How his chipped finger feels is just one of the unknowns. But there's a lot of factors. And anything that throws him off a little bit, you know, I guess with rookies, this you kind of look at it this way. A small thing can be a bigger thing, whether it's a defender flashing in front of them or an injury. We just don't know how he's going to react in a myriad of situations. So it's just an unknown. If I had 10 years of this guy being hurt, but playing and starting and still throwing the football and whatever, finding ways, quote unquote, then maybe we'd look at it a little differently. We think he's tough. You got to be tough to play the sport, blah, 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 blah. But this is not. And the other thing is every body is different. So there's no way to say, well, I had a chipped finger, so X, or I have a sprained ACL, so that's how it's going to affect this particular person. I don't know where exactly it hurts him when he throws. I don't know how much it hurts him when he throws. I don't know if it throbs in, but we don't know what it is, but we know it's something. Fact. And here's the other thing. It's not like John Lynch came out and said he'll be ready to roll by Monday. He said, I hope. He's got some swelling. It's down. We hope he's ready to go Monday. But
you know, maybe Monday roll around and he'll be fine and we'll look back and go, it was nothing. But in the moment, we don't know.
Here's the other element, too. And you would think about this with a quarterback because they get sacked and they get tackled. He's a runner. So when he's running, like, you fall on your hand, right? I know you'd be carrying the ball, but, like, the way you fall, people are hitting you. It's, I think you have to factor that in as well, right? Because if someone hits it and then it really breaks, obviously you could break your finger at any moment playing the sport of football, but if it is compromised, it's something that it's just, I think you 100% have to lean cautious, and you're just going to need his, you didn't just draft it to like risk anything. So I, where I sit right now, I'd say 50-50 he even plays.
The to that point, though, I think you're right on the running. Because
Fresno State, Cal Poly education.
When he was injured the other day, you said, I was like, he can just run the ball. And you're like, well, he still has to take the snaps. When you just said, it's one thing to throw, but when you're running and you're falling, that's an interesting situation. Because what Doug Christie, I remember years ago, told me was, the second you get an injury and you try to play through it, now you're at risk of hurting something in all likelihood if on the in the other side of your body. So you hurt your right hip. You play hurt, now your left hip is at risk, or your left knee is at risk, or your left ankle is at risk, because you're going to try, your body's going to try and compensate, right? So if it's bad enough that you're falling and he's thinking about it, and instead of catching himself with that hand, he tries to protect the finger and falls on a shoulder instead, right? Now that's at risk. Now, if he's good enough to throw the football, you'll take that risk, you'll play him. Because if he's good enough to throw the football, then hopefully he's not thinking about the finger. But yeah, there's a chance that it is all or nothing, right? Like, to me, he either plays as much as Kyle is planning to play him week one, or he doesn't play at all. There's not an in-between here. There's not, I was going to play him 15 snaps. Now we'll give him three plays that, you know, are going to, it'll be shotguns where he only carries. Like, you can't do that.
I completely agree. There's no dipping your toe in the water with him. If the reason you have to hesitate is because of this finger, which clearly would be the reason, right? Which would mean that practice... Like, I would say the moment we find out the practice report comes out, whenever the NFL, which is the only sport that legally mandates it, and it's why they're running circles around everyone gambling. Obviously, it's actually not. It's easier to gamble on football than it is the other sports. But it is something that, like the other sports, golf included, like, you can't have Colin Morikawa be your fourth biggest favorite a couple weeks ago, and then he comes out after the first day when he shoots, like, three over and be like, yeah, I've had back problems. It's like, well... You guys are going to do these big deals with gambling stuff. Like, there has to be some sort of transparency with injuries. And the NFL has been doing it forever. They have an injury report.
Patriots haven't been always participating, but yeah.
No, they haven't. But for the most part, everyone
else maybe
does.
That was just Brady.
That was just Tom. But they've been shady. And teams are shady, but once something's out, it's impossible to be shady about. Right? Like, a lot of people do it to hide stuff. This is not hidden. So it's if he's limited in practice come Monday, I think it's fair to say, like, okay, this is in doubt, which would suck. But also from a 49er standpoint, they are lucky that their opponent, it's kind of irrelevant. It's not irrelevant because you always want the looks and the reps for the young player. But if you had to have him miss a game on your schedule, this is probably the one you'd circle.
I agree, but that's where I'll stop agreeing that it's that you're right. It's the easiest one to miss, but. I go back to what I said after the second preseason game. It's just so critical for this guy to play and get experience. And so if you're going to use him in a critical spot against the Eagles on the road, then it matters if he hasn't been in a... It matters if he didn't play at Detroit.
No, that's fair. And plus, like, let's just go big picture. The first game of his career, he's not healthy enough to play. Like, it's not nothing. It's just not. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Now, Nate, so we talked the other day. Before they made their cuts, what happens with Nate Sudfeld? And does that tell us anything? So he's on the practice squad. Probably if Trey Lance is healthy, Nate Sudfeld might be on their practice squad anyway, right? I thought initially several weeks ago he would have.
Because you need someone to run the scout team.
It became clear that three was going to be the way they were going to do it. So that doesn't – I'm just following up. We wondered if that would be a factor or if that would give us any information. It really didn't. But we'll, you know, and the other thing is you'll find out, like, they can say whatever they say about him. Is he practicing? Right? Is he taking snaps? Is he handing the ball off? Is he throwing next week? Whatever they tell us his condition is, what's he doing in practice? Because again, practice for this guy matters.
Yep. Actions, not words, guy.
For this guy needs practice.
right? If he was a 7-year vet, it doesn't tell. If he was a, hell, if this was week 17 and he'd played 16 weeks, it wouldn't necessarily tell us something, right? Be like, all right, he can, doesn't need to practice, whatever. But they want him to practice right now. Jimmy could miss some practice time.
Yes.
So Schrager, I mean, I think a lot of people probably, the question you always have with Schrager too is, does Peter, hey, Peter, man, what does Peter know? Who's Peter talking to, right? Because Peter's not pull it out of his ass guy.
No.
So is he talking to somebody who feels that way around the Niners building? Or, you know,
yeah, just, I, he also to me to make Jones. To me, to make that statement, though, when the guy's got a cast on his finger, it's just, it's a little complicated. I think that statement, if he's fully healthy, it's like, it's, maybe it's, Peter, there's a variable here.
Maybe
you can't start him with a fucking cast on his hand.
What I would say to Peter is, Peter, do you know that they're really confident that he's going to be 100% by next week? Is that what you're saying this?
How could they possibly be confident when he's got something on his hand? That'd be my thing.
Well, yeah, I'm just, that's, that would be, did somebody say to him, nah, we feel pretty good, he'll be ready to roll by Monday or Tuesday. But it's not, to your point, it's not the way you'd want to lead up to your first career start, which, again, is out the window at this point.
Yeah.
It would be the shocker of week one if Trey Lance started the football game. Now, what if he starts a series and then, like, it's like he started, quote unquote, but he wasn't the starting quarterback? You couldn't do that to Jimmy, right?
Jimmy Garoppolo's going to be the first quarterback out there. I feel pretty confident about that right now.
I just started thinking, is there just a second, is there a scenario where Kyle puts him on the field with the first offensive package to throw everything off, but doesn't act, he's not actually the main quarterback of the football game? Would Kyle dare do that?
I don't think so. I don't think that happens.
I don't think so either. But I do think what Schrager is saying, sooner, the second that finger is healthy and we see that it's healthy, then that's a real conversation again. But this is on pause until that's the case.
Well, it's been a real, it is a real conversation, right?
That's why I said, but again, it's a real conversation again. Yeah.
I know, but like for him to say ripped a bit, like it's not possible right now.
All right, John, another piece of news that's been, it's a big part of the 49ers discussion is, what do you do with Brandon Ayuk? A lot of people have had a lot of opinions on what to do with Brandon Ayuk as a punt returner. We talked about it on the last show. Is he the guy? It's been a discussion for, I think, several weeks. He is dynamic. He was a dynamic punt returner in college. His last year at Arizona State, he averaged 16 yards per punt return, albeit only on 14 punt returns. And I tweeted at Paul D. Podesta, who's had an inactive Twitter account for the last 3 years, to ask him if they've done a study on the likelihood that a player gets injured more when on punt return. No reply yet, John, but we'll wait. We'll wait.
When you say inactive, you mean deactivated, or he just doesn't tweet?
Hasn't tweeted in 3 years.
God, that's fucking incredible. Well, I'm jealous.
I couldn't believe Paul DePodesta was on Twitter.
You want to keep a pulse on everything. I think Sam Hinkie's on Twitter.
His last tweet was like, congrats to the Henderson Mudcats on their affiliation with the Reds, or something like that. But where do you fall on Ayuk, punt returner?
I actually had this thought last night. I listened to a little bit of Kawakami, Barrows, and Lombardi did a little podcast. Oh,
that's a good show.
Yeah, and they were talking about just some different roster stuff. You know, they get kind of nerdy on it. And it was like, it's a good little refresher for my ears. I like playing the hits. And so we do. And they were kind of just talking just some in-depth, like the punt returner was a big point of discussion.
Yeah.
And I just had the thought, you can't fucking play scared. Everything's about being so terrified. And I get like that too during training camp and don't play anybody. I just don't know if you can just think like that 24/7. Someone sent me a video of Deion Sanders.
John Dickinson. I watched it last night too. I was about to bring that up.
Benito Santiago. And he's on first base, right? And he steals, he gets caught. And he was leading the baseball in steals. And I was just thinking, can you imagine right now if, Jalen Ramsey was just leading Major League Baseball in steals? And honestly, Deion was even better, obviously way better than Jalen Ramsey. But, try to think about that. And this guy was by far probably immediately the best corner in the league, or at least really quick by year two. He was by far the best punt returner in the league. No one back then, I would say really the last decade, it's been you got to take them off. You just put your best fucking players. You don't make, it's not high school, you don't make them go you know, like both ways, even though Deion played some offense. But like if the guy has a core role on special teams, when my second year in Philly, when I was advanced scouting Harbaugh, do you know who he had on punt? Navarro Bowman played punt. Navarro Bowman.
Yep.
Chased kicks. That was the mindset.
And they had all their starters.
One thing Barrows mentioned, he's like, that first Harbaugh season, a major point of difference. They were not very good on offense. They had a good run game, but they had no passing game. It was defense and special teams. So, like, can Patrick Peterson, let's just think recently. Patrick Peterson, Honey Badger when he first got to Arizona. DeSean Jackson, Tyreek Hill, they throw him back there sometimes. Odell Beckham, the first 3 or 4 years in New York. Like, if he's one of your best players, and he clearly is, he's by far your most dynamic returner, just talent-wise, I think you do it. Now, it's risky, and don't get me wrong, like, you're kind of holding your breath, but do we hold our breaths way too much? Like,
all my friends that are parents freak out,
like, you know, you can't, you got to walk your kid over there. When I was a kid, we just walked across the street by ourselves.
Yeah, so you know? I agree that that's true. I agree that sometimes we do play too afraid and that we do hold our breath too much, but I don't know that that means that Brandon Ayuk should be on punt return. I tend to believe he should be, but I'll take the other side of this conversation because I do think there are two. I do think you can reasonably argue that he should not be. Because my thought, I had the same thought, not about Jalen Ramsey, but just watching Deion last night. But the other thought I had watching this clip, and it's called, it's like 5 minutes on YouTube. It's called Deion Sanders Plays Cat and Mouse with Benito Santiago. That clip ends with Benito Santiago outsmarting Deion, calling a pitch out, and throwing him out at second base. Deion got thrown out a league high 16 times that year trying to steal. Now, he stole 38. So you still 70% success rate. But I looked it up last night.
Is that good? Is that good?
It's pretty good, especially in that day. I think now it's probably a little higher now. I don't know. But
because you wouldn't be stealing as much, right? People don't steal.
And you hit more home runs now. Although 94 guys were hitting home runs too, right? But I did watch that clip and I thought, is Deion stealing second because that's the best thing for his team right now? Or is Deion trying to steal second because he wants to steal a bag on Benito Santiago? It was awesome. Did you notice who the pitcher was, by the way?
No. Who?
Mark Gardner.
I was watching him. No shit.
Former Bulldog, former Giant.
Fresno Zone. Yep. Yeah.
And that I had that thought watching this. It's like, is Deion doing... Now, that Deion did it to everybody. And they throw over and they throw over and they throw over. And it was really cool. But in the end, was it worth it? Is it worth it if you're going to get thrown out 16 times to steal 38? I think the answer is probably yes on that. But in that particular, I don't remember it outs, whatever. And like Brandon Ayuk, what we're talking about here is probably 25 returns over the course of a season, maybe 20, right? If you made him your full-time punt returner. Because you could also do the thing where you just sprinkle him. But let's just say you're looking, the guy that I think the league high punt returns last year in 2020 was 30. That was Hines in Indy. That was
the most. Doesn't it seem crazy? Doesn't it feel like people punt more? I guess people rotate their punt returners.
You kick punts out of bounds. You fair catch.
I would have guessed like 80 returns, but you're right.
Number one in the league was 30 punt returns last year. And I think you're looking at, again, he was 16 in college. I went and looked. DeSean Jackson, as a rookie, had 9 yards per return. His second year, they stopped kicking half. His second year, DeSean, was 29 returns, 15 yards per return. DeSean was incredible that year, by the way. That was
one major difference, I would say, for Beckham, Honey Badger, and DeSean, probably different than Ayuk, is like they were elite at the punt return. Like DeSean, that was a major thing he hung his hat on to be an elite player. Same with the Honey Badger. Same Patrick Peterson did it at LSU. Like they were easily Dante Pettis when he was coming out, even though he never did in the pros. Like that was a point of differentiation when I'm scouting. I'm like, this guy could be a Pro Bowl returner.
Yeah.
All those guys were listing. Brandon Ayuk doesn't get talked about like that. He's more by default, right? If he was on a team with DeSean Jackson, you wouldn't be like, not now, but DeSean when he was younger, you wouldn't flip a coin. Like, let's split these two guys. DeSean would just do it, right?
Right. But DeSean's an outlier, right? Maybe we should be talking about Brandon Ayuk that way based on 16 yards per return his last year at Arizona State, right?
Yeah, maybe he could be really good, but I'm just saying, like, I don't think when people were scouting him, maybe they did. Maybe I'm underselling him. I didn't watch his special teams tape at Arizona State. So maybe he is a gem at that. Maybe they think he could be a separating factor for them that could be, you know, 3 or 4 times a year Maybe he has 40, 50 yard returns, and right? Huge flip field position.
So you nailed it. That's what we're talking about here. I think this the case to make him your punt returner is stronger than the case to not make him your punt returner. But what we're talking about here is like give or take 25 returns and give or take, you know, 12, maybe if it's going really well, 15 yards per return, maybe it's 9. So if you're getting 15 yards once a game out of nowhere because Brandon Ayuk's back there, that's great. But is Brandon Ayuk getting 15 yards when your other guy would have got 0, or is he getting 15 yards where your other guy would have got 7?
Well, they don't have another guy. That's part of the problem.
I mean, like, part of this is you just make another guy out of thin air, right? You find
you could go acquire a guy. That to me is the question. So is it worth acquiring someone who can just do the role probably at this point in time average to below, or take a guy that has a huge high upside, but he's your best receiver?
My issue is not that he might get – we talked about this a lot the other day, and I realized in retrospect that we didn't address one part of it. It's not that he's going to get blasted while he's standing back there waiting on a fair catch. It's that Brandon Ayuk has a very small history to work with, but some soft tissue issues to this point. We don't have 5 years of data, right? Just a
well, he's injured right now.
A hamstring pops up or a groin pops up. To me, it's more about that. Now, I thought David Lombardi made a great point on Twitter. He's like, if you're going to run him on end of rounds and you're going to throw slants, like you're putting him in harm's way in those situations, probably more so. Right? And it's true. It's absolutely true. But, you know,
well, it's like I said, there's no defenseless receiver. I mean, technically it's a rule, but you know there are defenders out there. The difference with punt, you are not really looking at the people coming, right? And you really have no clue. That's why they put in the halo deal, right? Because yeah. You're running as a wide receiver, ultimately, right? You can move. You're stagnant as a punt returner. I don't even think we properly give those guys enough respect. Like, it's crazy as a kick returner, but you do have blockers, and you get to running start. As a punt returner, your feet are fucking not moving, and multiple guys, I would say the average gunner speed now in the league is probably 4.45. So if either one of those two guys do not get shoved into the cooler and they beat the double team, I guess sometimes there's only one double team on the side, depending, but if you could get killed.
Yeah.
Even if that guy's not that tough of a guy, he's just speed in the body. Every year, guy in college and the pros, we see hellacious collisions on that play. Hellacious.
Look, this is why I'm saying I think your initial point of view is accurate. Like, it's football.
Well, you go,
wow! But, no. But I understand not wanting to do it. And yes, 10 yards is important. 15 is important. Sometimes you're going to get 45. Maybe you'll get a touchdown out of it. Maybe you won't.
Right. Well, I think
not a lot of touchdowns get scored on punt return.
Well, one thing Barrow's mentioned, and he's right. He's
last like, year, well, there were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 touchdowns in the NFL scored on punt return.
They have not been very good in the return game with Kyle Shanahan, and especially the last couple of years. And I'll defend it this. Like, listen, I do value special teams. I understand it. But if I had to choose, like, it's the third, right? I want to be awesome on offense, awesome on defense.
I want to be great in all phases, but especially the other two.
Yeah. So it's
until
like
you're
sometimes
in a close game and your kicker stinks.
I think ultimately what Barrows was saying, and he's right, is like they just lean offense defense over worrying about the returner, and that's why they're at this spot right now. Like, if you truly, like, John Harbaugh's teams would have just factored in and maybe kept a Webster, right? Like, they always had, because he's a special teams guy at heart. That's just who he is to his core. Belichick. Like, there's a chance that a Matt Slater type, who I swear to God is going to have the same length of a career Brady had, but if his, you know, he's going to have 20 years on
is
the
he end up as, like, the third longest tenured NFL player ever behind Brady and Frank Gore?
It's not crazy to think about. A lot of teams, there's no chance on God's green earth that he would make it on a lot of teams. He just wouldn't. I mean, at Belichick's core, like, he's kind of a nerd for that shit. And I understand it, but I do think you're playing with fire a little bit. But I sometimes need to remove myself from that line of thinking and be like, you can't just be a pussy and absolutely everything you need to do. Sometimes you just got to roll. You know, because that's what good players do. They just play.
There's
good
no
players
doubt.
Play.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I just wonder how much, and it's hard to know this. Like, what is the expected gain what is the expected gain? And the expected gain.
Well, I think he's dramatically better than every. I think he was dramatically better than everyone they had on their like the 90 man roster. Like it was clear he was by far. Those guys weren't good enough to just get kept for that alone.
Right.
Like
right.
What I'm saying is not
the gain over the replacement. Just what is twice getting two 40-yard punts worth it? It might be if those two punt returns happen in big games, right? It might be. Well, it might be the field position that changes the game.
Could Richie James have just done both, right, if he's healthy? Do they just keep him just to be a punt returner and kick returner? I don't know.
The problem is he's just the significant drop-off between what he showed and the other receivers they kept.
Yeah, like the other receivers. That's the thing with like Juwan Jennings and Hurd. They make sense to keep on the team just because both of them, you're basically just hoping one of them hits out of the two of them. That's the way I think they're looking at it. And they were just probably nervous cutting them. Who knows? They didn't want to fuck with it. And I get it. But do either one of those guys have value on special teams? We know they're not returners, but I'm just talking like they're not fast enough to cover kicks.
Yeah, and it's hard on a roster that we've saw. We'll talk about it. You had no wiggle room with their roster. They had too many guys, which is a good
roster building. Roster building is not easy. You know, I think a lot of fans, myself included, can get very critical on moves. It's difficult.
Well, especially when you factor in the special teams, which you have to do. Because somebody has to cover.
It's dramatically easier coming out of a training camp, I would say, like in the NBA, right? Like you're basically choosing one individual. Like, should we keep this guy or this guy? To do what? Oh, be the 14th guy. He's not going to play. So it's pretty cake.
John,
even baseball. How many guys in a baseball spring training truly are fighting for a roster spot? A couple for a 25 man?
Even then, you probably get to keep most of them. You send them to AAA.
Yeah, and then those guys end up coming up anyway throughout the season.
John, let's tell the people about our friends at DraftKings promo code HAM. Download the app. Use the promo code HAM. Right now, we've got a game going in the Haberman and Middlecoff DraftKings League. It is a golf event. It is as big as it gets. It's a great time. Get in the league now, even if you're not in that event, because then you'll get the invite when it all starts next week. Our NFL games are going to be awesome.
Here's the key, guy. Here is the key. You download the app. Go to the app store, download the DraftKings app. Then use the promo. I had someone DM me. Like, I'm looking for the promo code. I'm in your guys' games every week. You got to do it when you download the app. That's when
you first sign up.
Yeah, when you first sign up to be part of DraftKings. Once you're in it, there's not like a promo code every week to get in our games. Like, you're part of it. And then, like I said, if you're playing on a golf game, you're already on the list. You'll naturally be added once we start doing football next week. And I think the question is going to be, do we factor in Thursday night games or we just do Sunday? You know, I don't know. We'll have to kind of talk through this next week.
Give us your feedback. My inclination right now is to only include Sundays.
Yeah, I think just Sundays, especially early on the season when there are a bunch of Sunday games and no buys, there's just a lot going on. I'd say the first two or three weeks, it's easy to go Sunday only.
Yeah.
And you don't have to, I don't like a guy like Brady throws four touchdowns, he's in the lead, then you're waiting on it, you know.
Right, right. Or your quarterback plays Thursday and stinks, and now you're Sunday's out for you.
I know. Exactly. You take Dak Prescott, shoulder hurts, and he only plays one quarter. You know, it can be a killer. So download the DraftKings app, promo code AM.
They got the new Instant Win Challenge from DraftKings, Wild Cards. When you download the app, you claim your first wild card for free when you use that code HAM. Up to $50 million in prizes up for grabs with 1 in 4 winning instantly. It's very easy to do, as John said. $50 million of prizes up for grabs. No better way to start gearing up for the NFL season. The official daily fantasy partner of the NFL. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com. For details. Podcast also brought to you by our friends at butcherbox.com/ham, where right now, when you get your first box, you get 3 pounds of chicken breast, 2 pounds of burgers, and 1 pound of hot dogs for the price of free.
Could you repeat that one more time?
Butcherbox.com. John, you get 3 pounds of chicken breast. Okay.
Ooh.
That's a lot of leg day you can fuel with 3 pounds of chicken breast and 2 pounds of burgers and 1 pack of hot dogs for free, for free, when you sign up at butcherbox.com/ham right now.
Guy, once you're signed up, you choose your box and delivery frequency. They offer 5 boxes, 4 curated box options, as well as popular custom box, so you get exactly what you and your family love. ButcherBox ships your order frozen at peak freshness and packed in eco-friendly, 100% recyclable boxes. You enjoy great tasting. I know you had. Did you have your meat this week?
Had Taco Tuesday, Taco Salad, the Trader Joe's Doritos crumbled up. I went to take a photo of it. I took the photo and I just realized ground beef just doesn't photograph well.
Yeah.
I didn't post it.
Well, you should have taken a post of just the salad.
The salad, you know? Or the pack of meat before it went in, maybe. That's about the ground beef. It doesn't photograph great, but it tastes amazing.
In a pan. I'm with you. It was good.
It was so good.
Yep. Yeah. So just
some chop up.
So Haberman just had taco salad. Like,
taco sauce. You can just spray it on there. Or taco seasoning.
Oh.
So easy.
ButcherBox wants you to enjoy the summer. Like I said, with the special deal ButcherBox has given you, our listeners, 3 pounds of chicken, 2 pounds of burgers, 1 pack of hot dogs for free. Right now, new members get this special deal when they sign up at ButcherBox.com/ham. That's ButcherBox.com/ham. Free chicken, free burgers, and free doggies.
Prize Picks is America's number one fantasy sports app because it's the easiest and most exciting way to get in on the action. While you watch your favorite players in sports, you just pick more or less on two or more player stats, and then the fun is on. Prize Picks has something for every sports fan, from basketball to hockey to League of Legends and everything in between. It's really simple to play. You make your picks, submit an entry in less than 60 seconds. I'll do it at halftime of a basketball game. And I also have some season-long more or less picks on MLB homers. You may remember, I've got less on Ohtani homers this year. We'll see. And at halftime of your next NBA blowout game, just jump on and go, Steph Curry more than 11 points in the second half. It'll change the game for you. Download the Prize Picks app and use the code HAM50 for a first deposit match of up to $100. That's HAM50 for a first deposit match of up to $100. Prize Picks, pick more, pick less. It's that easy. They say you're not supposed to give out multiple URLs in one ad, but for a great cause, you do it. Today's show is brought to you by Manscaped. Did you know? One man every hour, every day, is diagnosed with testicular cancer. In fact, testicular cancer is the most common form of cancer among men age 15 to 35. I did not know that. April is National Testicular Cancer Awareness Month, and Manscaped is donating $50,000 to the Testicular Cancer Society. You can visit manscaped.com/TCS to learn how to check yourself for early signs of cancer. And, of course, use the code HAM for 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com. With this in mind, you can perform simple routine self-checks at home while enjoying the Manscaped products like the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. If you don't like making a mess, it's great because this thing is waterproof. Shave in the shower, shave in the ocean, shave in the hotel. Code HAM at manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping.
The 49ers made a trade the other day before the 53-man cutdown, and they traded Jonas Griffith to the Niners. To the Broncos. And that day we talked about the fact that the night before somebody had reached out to you in the league and asked what you thought about Jonas Griffith, a scout. And
he actually just said the backup linebackers in general. Cause I said, well, which ones? He's like, well, I think they got several that are 53 man type guys.
Well, it turns out he was right. How about that? The Niners had three players, claimed, which I believe led the league. Most players claimed in the NFL.
I would actually look at it like four.
Justin Hilliard got claimed. Simba Webster got claimed. Dakota Shepley, the offensive lineman. I'm sorry, go ahead.
So you can technically look at it like they had four, right? Because one was traded. They're basically acknowledging the Broncos are, this guy's not going to make it to us on the waiver claim.
Yeah.
We think this guy's going to get, you know, or we're not going to risk it missing out on a claim.
Not worth the
risk. So we are going to trade. So when you see these guys, they get traded, you're like, wait, what, who's this? Who'd my team just get for a sixth or seventh round pick? That team is basically acknowledging, we would claim this guy, but I don't even want to worry about the risk of getting the waiver wire and the Jags claimed him or the Lions claimed him, right? I will just trade you. It shows you what they truly... No, I think it's not really a knock on a sixth round pick. A sixth round pick to me is worthy to trade you right now of a guy that can make my 53 week one.
Was there a kind of the value round swap in that trade too, I think?
Yeah, there's a lot of that. There's like, you know, if the guy's a starter, a conditional can turn up to a fifth. If he's not, a seventh. I'm not saying the Niners exactly, but I saw some different type guys like that get traded. Some swaps, some sixth, seventh. Some teams like, I give you a fifth. I give you the player in my seventh. So every player's a little different, I would imagine. But he was right. And I actually think this speaks to I saw some quotes that Lynch had. He talked to the media yesterday, and he just said he thinks his team's pretty good. You know, and you never know, right, until they actually play, but he feels pretty confident. And when I got that text, I was like, that's a good thing, man. And this is before, like, where you and I sit, unless you watch, and this is that's why I don't like the preseason, because you have to watch 8 million Hilliards. But, my buddy was fired up on him. He thought Griffith was really good. He's like, that's the guy I would have wanted for us. And so it is exciting because you watch a lot of guys that are these names, right? These undrafted free agents on teams. Most of them go unclaimed and they just go practice squad. But, you know, however many guys get claimed or traded, let's say it's 30 or 40, those are the players that like get buzz in the league. Like, damn, this is a good find, undrafted free agent. You get credit for that. Like, you get credit for Hilliard being an undrafted free agent and flipping him for a pick, right? You get credit for having guys that get claimed. That's a positive. I remember in the peak of Harbaugh, probably going into year three, I think they had like 7 players claimed. Because I remember John Dorsey, and when Andy got that job, hires John Dorsey as GM, remember the Chiefs had the number one overall pick the year before. They ended up taking Eric Fisher, but they were bad. So they were number one in the waiver wire. They claimed like 7 guys that first year. And they ended up making the playoffs. They went from like the number one overall pick to a playoff team because they traded for Alex and had Andy. But like you can, to me, once you're past like the 5th spot in the waiver claim, if you like a guy, if you really like him, it's probably worth just trading a 6th-round pick for the guy because you just can't risk, unless you feel pretty confident the guy's not going to get claimed like a wide receiver. But these linebackers and linemen and DBs, like if they were clearly balling in camp, they just get acquired. But you get credit, like every team, like even bad teams can have a player that gets acquired. If you got like 3 or 4, it's like, fuck, you got a pretty good roster. It also shows like, did you keep the right guys? Like the other backup linebackers over Hilliard and Griffith, you know, their starters are clearly the starters, but like, did you keep the right backups? And you don't really know.
No, I mean, it's the DJ Reed situation, right? It's Caden Smith. That was a pick they nailed because if your 6th-rounder's playing in the league contributing for somebody, then you nailed the pick. Like, and he's an NFL contributor now for the New York Giants, right? That was a 6th-round pick. Like, yeah. They've done this consistently now. We'll see. This is the part with John Lynch when a
They draft better later?
Yeah, I mean, it's such
Elijah
a testament.
Mitchell made the team, you know. Marcel
Harris, DJ Reed were 5th and 6th-rounders. Richie James, say what you want, 7th-rounder. DJ Jones was a 6th-rounder. Adrian Colbert was a 7th-rounder. I mean,
don't they have a tight end on their team that was like 5th?
Are you thinking of Charlie Warner? Maybe he was a 6th-rounder.
No, I think there another tight end. Ads with sunglasses, I think, and just reading bifocals. Huh. Zenny, I think.
I'll have to do some research on that if they have a 5th-round tight end. But it is such a credit to the scouts, right, to the front office, to John. It's when you. When a guy comes out with John Lynch's background to become a GM of a team, one of the things you ask yourself is like, does this person, anyone can have an opinion on the first 5 picks in the draft, right? Like John Lynch could go do, if they had called John Lynch while he was doing games for Fox, I'm like, John, come do the NFL draft coverage for us. The first question naturally would be, the 1st round or all 7? Right.
Yeah.
That's part of what made Mayock so fascinating on the draft. You're like, this guy like wants to know what's going on the 7th and it's why people thought Mayock could be an NFL evaluator, because the grind.
What felt like he liked talking about 5th-rounders more than 2nd-rounders.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, this is becoming, we'll see, but it is becoming part of the signature of this front office. Does Hufanga end up, like, playing a ton this year for them? He was a 5th-rounder. What's Elijah Mitchell?
Guy, he might be the starting strong safety.
The Broncos had a 6th-round pick. He didn't make their team.
I would say this about Hufanga. If Hufanga starts for the 49ers week 1, that means he won the starting job. Now, part of it would be a little injury-related, right? Tart missed the entire... I don't think Hufanga starts if Tart's fully healthy from the jump, right? He would have made the team, but he had some variables on his plate. That, to me, is a pretty good scout, like just from an organizational standpoint. He did not play safety. He played linebacker. So when you see Teddy Bruschi and you go, oh, Teddy Bruschi is one of the great linebackers in Patriot history. He was like a defensive tackle in college. Like, when you project, Mayock, I posted something on Instagram with Nate Hobbs, who was an outside corner. He's their nickel now. It's a projection. That, to me, is when you get, like, a reach around from the scouting community. Like, God, that was impressive. Right? Like, when you do Taysom Hill and turn him into, like, a player, like, that type of stuff, it's easier to be like, well, you draft fucking Penei Sewell, he plays tackle. You draft, you know, Brandon Ayuk, plays wide receiver. Can you take a linebacker and turn him into a safety? Right? Can you, and that's what makes football, basketball doesn't exist because you all kind of, you know, I guess there are, it's kind of become positionless. In baseball, can you just like take an outfielder and teach him how to play catcher or the guy catcher and make him a pitcher? Like, that's incredible, right? What Josh Donaldson became was a catcher, then became a third baseman. Hufanga becomes a starting safety in the league for several years. That's pretty unreal because I would imagine most people thought he had no position.
Given his draft position, if he's a, just a solid backup for the next 4 years for you, that's pretty unreal. Fifth round pick. And if you, and we know this,
special teams making tackles.
He is bound. If you're in that position, you're bound to start football games, right? He doesn't have to be a 17-week starter, 17-game starter. If he's just the backup safety, he's going to start. I guarantee if he's their backup safety this year, he starts six games.
Well, yeah, because anytime that you get a fifth, sixth, or seventh rounder starting or playing for your team, you have to realize a lot of teams in the league did not think that guy was worthy of a draft pick, right? Or didn't value that player. Because if they did, he wouldn't have lasted that long. I would say definitely sixth and seventh rounders, right? You could say fifth. That's still like, there's still a lot going on.
Yeah, it does.
But once
feel
you get
like
the sixth or seventh round, you know, if I get a sixth or seventh, like Richie James in the seventh, right? That's just really incredible. Like, I think Hunter Renfrow, guys like that, right, in the fifth. Hufanga, like there are people in the NFL, I'm sure, in every building that like guys like that. Because if you watch USC, and I feel like I've fucking watched, for a team that doesn't win that much, it's like, God, I consume a lot of their content. That guy made plays for years, right? 15, he was their big hitter, made tackles. That guy was just making, Hunter Renfrow, you watch. But these guys, like, they have a fatal flaw. You go, he's too slow, he's too small. Hufanga, it's like, he's not fast enough, what position? All it takes is truly one team to like, when you take a guy in the fifth round, but deep down you're like, that was one of my favorite picks. I think this guy's going to be a player. Right?
Well, how many teams had a take on Justin Hilliard? Every single one of them. Why? Because he spent 6 years at Ohio State. Okay, now you used to tell me you'd go into a school and you wouldn't really write a guy up until he was draft eligible. Well, he played 3 years at Ohio State after becoming draft eligible. So he had 4 years. He had 4 years that you would have scouted him. His redshirt sophomore year, which was his third year, he was eligible to be drafted, played 11 games that year. Then his redshirt junior year, then his senior year, then another senior year. So everyone goes to Ohio State, right?
Did he play with any good players over that top?
Like, this guy didn't, wasn't that some nobody out of nowhere, right?
That, I would say that happens. That guy to me, I mean, all the guys I listed are at big schools, right? So it's a little different. Like, you're like, how'd you find Hufanga? You mean he's at USC, right? Or Renfrow, you mean when I was writing up the 17 other players for Clemson?
Yeah.
I watched
the national championship game.
I would say it's pretty incredible. Like, there's even a level of, like, if you find a Hufanga, a Renfrow from, like, a non-Power 5, like, that's just like, damn, that's a good pick. Right. It's not a bad pick when you find those guys, but when they are at major programs, like how many evaluations on Hufanga were there? Like every team in the league had five or six people wrote him up on every team, right? he's unavoidable. Now they picked him. I'm not trying to diminish the pick, but overall they're doing a really good job scouting, like the fourth through seventh. It's just, yeah, they're going to, for them to be really good this year, they're clearly like the Lances, the Ayukes, the Debos, right, are going to need to Bosa.
But part of this, what do we say about them when you think big picture and you compare them to 19? It's like, well, is their defense as good as 19? Part of getting really good on defense again is just these guys just replenishing your team. And depth, man. Like that's the Bosa's. The depth is the whole. We saw it happen last year. The competitive depth is when you talk to coaches this time of year, they talk so much about the depth of their teams because they know it's a long year and guys are going to get hurt. It's like, well, I could, you know, coaches love saying shit. I got nine offensive linemen that could start for me.
Like, that means as much to them as having five that can start for them. It's better. I mean, obviously, it's better because they know they're not going to get through the season with five.
Well, I was watching some of Howie Roseman's press conference, and they asked him about Landon Dickerson, right, who's their 37th overall pick, but he's coming off a torn ACL, and he's coming back, like, this week. And they're like, you know, do you vision him as a, you know, is there a chance he won't play this season? Well, and Howie's like, well, ideally, if all five of our starting offensive linemen stay healthy right now, he will not play a snap. But he's like, knock on wood, have you guys watched our team the last couple of years? Like, guys go down. So if guys go down and he progresses and healthy, yeah, he'll play, you know? But it's just, it's a hard thing to say. It's like, we love our depth. Yeah, we love the guy because we know that, like, we feel pretty good. He's going to be a starter. I'd say the offensive line, probably even more than the defensive line. Like, you have to know your backup center and backup swing tackle. It feels like every single team, that guy plays some games. And when I say play game, he doesn't rotate in like a slot receiver. He fucking starts, right? Yeah. Can you win a game if this guy has to start at right tackle for a month?
Well, how many teams have a backup lineman to start the year play more snaps than one of their original five? I don't know, half of them, maybe more than half, 70% of them?
Happens a lot. Happens a lot.
It's happening to somebody. All right, you mentioned Mayock, John. How about this quote from Mike Mayock? Let's read it here. We've assembled 53 players. We think we're going to be a pretty good football team. We're not hiding from expectations. I think John Gruden and I will both tell you we feel like we need to be a playoff team this year, and I don't think there's any doubt about that. And you guys are all going to put that in your headlines, and I understand it, but that's what the expectation is. We think we've done the infrastructure work necessary to put us in position. We've got to take care of business. So he's saying our roster's good enough. He's saying now it's – he's not saying – I don't think he's saying, like, now it's on John. But he's saying now it's like the team that's out there should be good enough, period. And if it is, we'll all be partying at Mark Davis's house. And there's plenty of room for everybody.
What you see is like a 1,000, you know, like room for, you know, 50 cars or something. That, you know, my favorite throw events there.
My favorite part of that the article I read about it was like, it does not have a dedicated man cave. And I'm like, of course, the whole thing is a man cave. Look at this house. No,
when someone first sent me the picture, you know what I thought? That I thought that was their offices.
I did,
like,
too.
I was like, that's the facility. And it's like, no, it's his house. I was like, is that a moat? No, it's like a pool. It's like a wraparound pool, the whole house.
It's pretty cool.
Probably pretty cool.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, what else is he going to say at this point? Like, you know, we're just another year of growth and next year. Like, he kind of had to say it. The problem is, do they believe that? Do they truly think they're a playoff team? Because you just look around the conference, they played just the way their schedule set up last year. Like, they played a lot of the fringe wildcard teams, right? And the teams that ultimately did. They didn't finish close to the playoffs. So can they make a three-game? It took 11 games, right, to make the playoffs. And then you'd be like, well, they would have been the next team. The Dolphins actually were right there at 10. And the Dolphins, we saw, it was kind of a coin flip game. They easily could have won it. But that, even if you win that game, then so you get 9 and they get 9, and it still would have taken 11 to get in, right? So that game was not the deciding factor of you getting in the dance or not. So I do think the gap is pretty wide, especially when you factor in, like, people get mad and they go, well, you make excuses for one but not the other. Well, the Niners had a lot of injuries last year. If Jimmy Garoppolo had played the whole season, they won 6 games. I mean, like, yeah, they probably shouldn't have brought everyone back. But that wasn't the case. The case with the Raiders is Derek's basically played every game the last couple years. I guess he hurt his groin, and Mariota started the one game.
Pretty good.
But for the most part, like, Derek's been very available, and really, credit to him, and Gruden deserves credit, resurrected his career. Because
definitely bounced back.
Yeah, it wasn't dead, but it was a strong bounce back. Like, now where he's valued. Now he's worth, on the open market, a first-round pick. He's worth, like, let's face it, if he's getting a contract. Is Derek Carr a $35 million quarterback? It'd be hard to say no. So... you have a $35, $40 million quarterback. If you build your team right, and I'd say him and Cousins are in the same vernacular, though I'd rather have Derek. If you build your team right, Cousins goes to the playoffs with Minnesota, right? That team is, like, a couple years ago, you know, the team that the Niners played? Like, that was dramatically a better squad than what the Raiders have, correct?
Yeah.
You know, Kendricks, Griffin, they had Harrison Smith, who just got a contract extension. obviously they had Thielen and Diggs. It's like Dalvin Cook. Are the Raiders that good? Now, Derek can be a little better than Cousins, so he doesn't need to be truly, like, he should be able to carry a little too. But defensively, man, I have a hard time seeing them be. I'll be stunned. Like, I would not pick them to make the playoffs.
No, well, their schedule makes.
It would be an incredible. I'll give Gruden a lot of credit if he can make the playoffs for this team. Actually, that's the way I'd look at it.
Yeah, I mean, there's.
Wouldn't you?
My first inclination is they should be a playoff team when we did this exercise, but then we went through their schedule and their schedule's difficult. Their schedule's not easy. So,
well, it starts so hard.
And their conference is very good. And their division is good. Like, it's just. So, yeah, if they make the playoffs, they are not going to be able to just kind of ho-hum their way to the postseason this year. They'll have to be explosive on offense, consistent on offense, and average-ish on defense. And average-ish is a major upgrade. Like, average on defense would be an incredible improvement. Right, like if they're average on defense, they might have the defensive coordinator of the year because of how bad they've been.
And let's face it, you play on Monday Night Football, and they excelled last year. Remember Week 2 against the Saints? I thought they were going to get their ass kicked, and they kicked their ass. I mean, they kind of took it to them. Is it going to be a little harder against Lamar? I mean, Drew couldn't.
Yeah,
throw.
I mean, Lamar's got no. Like, is everybody hurt on that team around Lamar Jackson right now?
No, I saw Hollywood's back, Sammy's okay. Back. Bateman is, he's got surgery, so he's out. Okay. Mark Andrews. I saw that Warren Sharp said that Gus Edwards, when they do like the pistol, one of their run formations, Gus was dramatically better at it than JK. Not saying that JK is not a better player, but one of their formations, like Gus is made for it. So it's like, you know, I guess they've had five different rushing leaders the last 5 years, you know. So it's just kind of their scheme
being,
with Lamar.
Being the running back with Lamar, yeah. You know, this is, I think part of this, when you go back to the original quote from Matt.
But that would be a pretty big upset, I'd say, Monday Night Football if they beat the Ravens, right? It would feel pretty big. It'd feel like a big win.
They do that, it's like, wait, is this team making maybe they are making the playoffs. Then you have to, because the schedule, we go through the schedule and pick win-loss, coin flip, whatever. But that's just paper. Like, you get to play the games. It's cliche, but it's really true. So you beat the Ravens. If we did the schedule exercise after they beat the Ravens, then we start looking at games differently. Very, you know. So it would change the way you look at them. But again, like, I also think such a huge part of the way we look at them, John Gruden's contract is such a big part of the way everybody looks at the Raiders. What Mayock just said, if you had any other coach in the world coming into year four, had not made the playoffs yet, it'd be like, dude, what time to put up or shut up. But John Gruden's not even to the halfway point of his contract. And so when you don't have that hanging over a team and over a staff and over an organization, your GM doesn't have to, or your owner doesn't have to make a decision on a contract. So many firings happen because you have to make a decision on a contract because you're not going to coach on the last year of a deal. So many guys get fired if nobody knew anybody's contract status, if you just never knew. Then guys would coach on the last year of their contract, I think. But you can't have it. So, especially now, more so in college than in the NFL. But when you're on the last year of your deal, we're constantly talking about, are you getting re-signed or not? And when you don't have that hanging over your head, there really is not any true accountability. Like, there is accountability. But the ultimate accountability is, can you lose your job or not for what's about to happen?
Yep. Like, there's a ton of urgency, right, in Chicago. Like, if they go 7-10, like, everyone's going to get fired, and everyone knows it. There's a ton of urgency in Arizona. If they go 7-10, the whole place is going to get fired. No one's going to get fired.
Yeah. I mean, now, again, and I'm not saying there's not.
Could be a coach. Or
well, certainly no one's getting fired in Oakland. You're right about that. Yeah. There's urgency because Mayock doesn't want to lose, and Gruden doesn't want to lose, and there's a lot of money being spent. Like, there is urgency, but it's just not. It's just not the same conversation on the outside because of the contract status.
Yeah, there's natural. I think it's fair to say there's natural urgency given the sport and how important every game is in every, I would say, Division I football program, right? If you walked into any building, whether it's USC or whether it's Alabama, it would all feel pretty tight, right? The NFL is no different. But, like, you see Jimbo just got a 10-year, $100 million added extension.
And Jimbo's original contract was how long? Like 7 or 8?
I thought it was 7 for 70 or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was huge. So he's going to get 17 and 170. But, like, I bet Jimbo's on edge right now, right? Just big season for them, and that's probably their end. But no one's like, God, if we don't get it done week two, we're fucked. You know? If you're Jimbo's guy, you're like, God damn, we're good for a while, right? And that is just, that's the balance of giving the 10-year contract to a guy that hadn't coached in 10 years, which is not going well. Like, I do think they're a major talking point this year from, like, Gruden just suck. You know, like, you go 4 years in the NFL without making the playoffs. When you have a good a quarterback, it would be pretty nuts, I think. They haven't gotten close yet. It'd be one thing if, like, you know, they lost week 17, it was a win or get in game, and they lost in the last second field goal. Something like that, at least. You'd be like, well, at least they were right there. Like, they've gotten in the last couple weeks, last couple years, like, yeah, good offseason. Yeah, get ready for the draft, right? Who are they going to re-sign?
Not
That's got to change. Not close.
And then it's like, if it's bad again, is Mayock stay on as GM? Like, that is, see, now that's the other conversation. But Mayock's not in charge of the players, so we don't talk about his contract or his job.
Wouldn't even matter.
Matter if we got him back on TV. I did want to mention this because I think over the years, when it relates to the 49ers, like you kind of mentioned it, we've talked so much about Kyle Shanahan and what Kyle's good at and what his strengths are. And I think we talk about his, like, X and O IQ all the time. I think his EQ comes up more than we probably discuss. And so I talked to Max McCaffrey yesterday, because Max McCaffrey, who's the oldest of the McCaffreys, is the offensive coordinator for Ed McCaffrey, who's the coach at Northern Colorado. So there's Max, there's Dylan, who was at Nebraska and is now at Rice. There's Christian, obviously. And then there's, Dylan was at Michigan and is now at Northern Colorado. Luke was at Nebraska and is now at Rice. And so we had this call.
What if you could combine the sperm of Bosa and McCaffrey and inseminate my future wife? Do you think that's possible? Can I split your swimmers?
Like, what are you willing to pay for that? What would that go for in the open market?
I would probably feel pretty comfortable paying $100,000.
Would you pay an extra $100,000 if it was if nobody else knew and everyone's like, God, that's Middlecoff's offspring?
Yeah, we wouldn't tell anybody. It'd be secret.
Yeah, but I mean,
I would pay more to keep the secret.
Even their mother didn't know. Like, nobody knew. You somehow, like, snuck it in, like Ontario Smith into, like, a Wizinator.
That'd be sweet. Yeah, I would pay more for that, for privacy. I would pay more.
Never tell the kid.
Never tell anybody. Me and my wife would be. I wouldn't. It wouldn't even mention it to any human. But my kids would be fucking dominant.
So disgusting, but interesting. So McCaffrey. Anyway, so we started talking about, like, just what's your offensive background. And he played for Duke. So he played for, I think, a guy that's really respected, especially in coaching circles, right? David Cutcliffe. He played on five
Manning's
NFL teams.
Guy.
Manning's guy. Played four. And he even said, he's not like, because he parts of, I think, like three seasons, different practice squads, that type of thing. Did get in a game with, I forget which NFL team, but he was with the Niners for like a year and a half on and off. And I just kept kind of pressing him, like what you were in the NFL, like what part of your NFL world is now part of you're going to be a first time offensive coordinator. Like, you're young, 3 years out of college, 4 years out of college, basically.
It's called Big J journalism right there, pressing.
And he was like, you know, I had a lot of good guys. I didn't ask him about Kyle directly. He just said, the one guy I will single out is Shanahan. And I thought, like, here we go. He's going to say the same thing that George Kittle told us. That same quote. Was it the Toilolo Falcons quote before the Super Bowl, where he's like, every time Kyle just knows what's going to happen before it's going to happen when it comes to scheming. But his thing was, it was not about that at all. It was all EQ stuff that he talked about. Because I was like, what is it that he did that you loved? He's like, it was a million little things. Like, if a player said, like, coach, we got to have this particular rehab machine for rehab, like, Kyle made sure we had it. He's like, he made it, the number one thing he did, he said, was he just made it so easy on us as players to perform. He made it so easy for us to play stress-free. And that, to me, is like, it's not just about telling a player where to go and making sure they do it. But the players are the artists. Like, there are going to have to be things that happen during the game that you could not as a coach control, and the players just going to have to be ready for an opportunity that nobody practiced for.
And you can't scheme every completion wide open.
Yeah, he said that was the – he created an environment where you could play stress-free. And then he also would listen to you. Like, he knew if players – maybe you were already ready for the week, he would ease up in practice. He said it was about the way he treated everybody. Like, from top to bottom in the organization, you just watch him. And this is why I just keep hearing stuff like this in addition to all the stuff you see when you watch him call plays. It's why I'm just continue to be so bullish on that guy, because I think it's the EQ in addition to the IQ. And I think so much is it, you cannot duplicate being just having been in the environment your whole life. Just like, this guy knows what, Max McCaffrey knows what discipline looks like, because his dad is one of the most disciplined people that has played.
I'd push back a little bit, though. I think his knock before he got the head coaching job, people viewed him and his dad kind of as like dicks.
Absolutely.
But like, it's kind of tough. I don't think he was viewed as like Mr. Player friendly. Like, come, I think he kind of butted heads.
But I would say that it turns out he's really good at the thing that we thought was going to be the biggest concern. Because we hear this consistently, yeah. John. Wouldn't you agree with that?
That
like his leadership skills are excellent.
If that was not a knock on him, coming out of Atlanta, hey, this guy is the most player friendly, greatest scheme guy we've ever seen. Players love him. I think he would have been offered by every team. He was not some can't miss coaching candidate coming out because of at least whether it was true or not, that was a true knock. Even Lynch mentioned it. Like when I talked to him, I was like, I'd heard some things. Because in fairness, his dad was really, I think, tough. Was just hard in a good way, but just his dad's old, like old school, came out in like the 80s and the 90s coaching football. It was just different. And I think Kyle clearly has some of that to him, the way he plays and what he demands of his team. I think his difference that is not the same with the Parcells, Shanahan, like that Belichick era of coaches, is they, even when you're doing it, they still are on you to keep doing it. I do think the new era, like the McVays, Kyle, LaFleur, if you do what they ask, they're cool with you. They're not like, I don't think Parcells most days was cool to be around. Even if you're like, fuck coach, we're 10-2. It was tough.
Probably didn't take a lot of feedback.
It was an era of coaching that was just a lot different. I mean, it truly was. And I just think these younger guys naturally like, I can't be mad all this time if these guys are killing it and they're just easier.
I like to call it the joggers generation, John. That's the modern coach. The coach who wears joggers. This is the joggers generation of coaches. A lot harder to scream at everybody.
There are some chubby guys, though, like Judge is a little chubby.
I don't mean
Sirianni's,
physical runners. I mean guys that wear joggers, wearing joggers. This is the joggers generation.
I think a huge factor is, like, I think Judge has some vibes of, like, kind of a guy you would have gotten in the 80s. It's like, God, this guy just feels like mean.
I know, but then I heard a Giants beat writer the other day talking about how he thinks the perception of Judge is like very different than like how his team views him. Like, because we read a story about him making guys run. This guy said, I'm around it every day. Like, he doesn't come off like this, like, do what I say and just listen to me. He said one of Judge's great strengths is he's a really good communicator. Like, he tells guys, remember he said that to McVay. Like, you have to be able to tell players why you're doing what you're doing. So as long as the players buy the why, I don't know. It's just, the Giants writer was like, I just need to say, I think the way everyone's talking about him on the outside, it's kind of cheap because it's not really how he's perceived in the building.
It's where the media can fuck you because a perception can take off. And I'm part of that.
But it's as simple as this. Perception doesn't. It doesn't matter how we. If he wins football games and it works, then who the hell? It doesn't matter. He'll succeed.
True, but like, what if he fails and everyone thinks he's an asshole and he's actually a pretty good guy?
People
like him.
But he failed. But like, the reason Charlie Weiss and these guys, what's his name from Detroit?
Patricia.
He failed because he literally lost more football games.
Yeah, he was terrible. He was terrible.
He lost.
But he's also a dick.
Right. But my point is, like, if it works, then...
Yeah. You can be a dick if you win.
All right. One other thing I wanted to mention. Shout out here, John, to a listener.
Oh.
Dominic Maroglio, John, who is currently hitting, 287 for the AA Amarillo Sod Poodles. That's not a joke.
Oh, ho, ho, ho.
But his on base is .333 with 8 bombs.
Keep creeping up. If we can get to the fours, you'll be in the bigs.
Buddy Mike Perry reached out and said, Dom is a listener. He's from Oakland.
What organization is that?
That's the Diamondbacks AA, Amarillo Sod Poodles. So, Dom, as you're out there busting, or maybe you're listening to us during early work, maybe you're doing some, he's a catcher. So maybe you're out there getting ready for a bullpen and just Ham's trying to get you through the day because it's 117 degrees in Amarillo by morning. Shout out to you.
If you ever hit a home run, I know you're going to hit one. So next home run you hit when you're passing by the first baseman, give him a wink and say promo code Ham.
Yeah, I don't know if you can do that. I don't know what would be the Ham hand gesture.
I don't know if that's even possible.
Yeah, I don't either.
Just scream guy at first base, John at third base.
We need a hand gesture, John. Like the four fingers in the air, fourth quarter. Something like that. Anything else you want to add today?
That's all I got.
All right, everybody. Thanks.
As of day one, you took Billy Horschel. He shot 500 today.
Billy's done already?
Yeah, I mean, my two last guys are in last place, 29 and 30th, Hideki and Matsuyama. Billy Horschel's like right in the mix. Like he's tied for seventh.
Billy loves – Billy has won the FedEx Cup before, back before it became
Billy knows when the cash is on the line. He comes out of nowhere.
Well, I actually went to the DraftKings to make my roster, John, and my thought as I was making it was like, man, sucks Billy Horschel's not in it this year. I just didn't think he was in it. He's in it.
He was 29th or 30th. Like he was last on DraftKings.
He finds a way.
That's a good pick. I'm jealous.
He finds a way. All right, y'all. Thanks for hanging.
Peace.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.